Hello and welcome to episode 16 of Awin Talks, the only podcast offering a network perspective on the wonderful world of affiliate marketing. My name is Kevin Edwards and I'm your host for this month, flying solo as Rob is currently in New York, combining a trip to Affiliate Summit East with an extended holiday. Craig's also taking a break from recording as he's in the US for the next 3 months, spending some time with our colleagues in Chicago and Baltimore. In other words, you're stuck with me, but don't worry, there's still plenty in this month's episode to distract from the absence of the dynamic duo. So coming up today, we'll be speaking to Tasmin from our publisher team, who will be showcasing a couple of partners for this month's publisher picks. One is a new proposition that has a compelling consumer offering at its core, and the other is an established affiliate making waves in the telecom sector. We'll also be chatting to Kate Irvine from our commercial team as she pitches her presentation ideas and asks for your votes to secure a speaking slot at this year's PI Live event. And then finally, this month's main interview is with Claire O'Brien from the advertiser-focused trade body ISBAR. She'll be explaining why performance marketing is firmly on the radar of the CMOs she speaks to and about how affiliate marketing can better position itself to take advantage of this heightened interest. First up, though, a landmark piece of work from the US, the release of the first affiliate study of its kind there that scopes out the size and scale of the affiliate industry. For our UK listeners, you may remember that about 7 years ago, a group of affiliate businesses under the auspices of the Internet Advertising Bureau decided to try and understand what the full reach of the market was. Historically, the IAB's ad spend had only taken into account network fees, ignoring the commissions that drive the actual sales. Hiring the services of PwC, we collated and modelled all of the data from across the affiliate spectrum and produced an annual survey that became the benchmark for the industry. Now, it can't be underestimated how significant this was at the time. I've seen it being used by trade press, referenced by advertisers, and other sources as putting a definitive and impressive stamp on the power of the channel. For years, the US, in particular the Performance Marketing Association there, said they wanted to do something similar, but it's taken until now, a couple of years from the initial scoping to the actual delivery for something to be produced. Collating numbers from 8 networks and modelling from additional businesses such as Amazon and eBay, the top-level figure of $6 billion spent on commissions and fees is a fantastic chunky number that shows that not only are programmes viable for thousands of advertisers, but there's more than enough to support many thousands of viable affiliate businesses too. One other really healthy trend that emerged from the study was the split of commissions among affiliate categories. In the US, the largest affiliate category by commission payout is the blogger and content community, a sign of the rude health the industry is in there. If you'd like to find out more about this study, you can visit the PMA's website, which is thepma.org, or visit Awin's US website, where you'll find an article that was published last week entitled Taking the Pulse of the US Affiliate Industry. Next up, have you ever wondered how wider events outside of the affiliate world can have a positive impact on your performance marketing campaigns? Well, an Awin case study from our team came to our attention this week that demonstrated just that. New consumer-focused telecom regulations came into effect on July the 1st this year that made it easy for mobile customers to switch tariffs and providers by simply sending a text message. The new streamlined and simplified process, so-called text-to-switch, helped contribute to a 57% year-on-year increase in mobile market sales as a whole and a 104% year-on-year increase in 12-month SIM-only deals. 30-day SIM-only deals also saw an uplift of 27% from the previous week and a 25% uplift when compared to last year. Awin compiled the data from our weekly mobile benchmarking report, active since 2014 and available to all our telco clients, that looks at sales per brand of handsets, SIM-only deals and pay-as-you-go. To analyse the impact of the text-to-switch changes on the SIM-only market, the report was used to assess how the market had shifted when compared to previous years of data already accessible. The results showed that SIM-only sales volumes for the week commencing the 1st of July when text-to-switch was launched were the third largest sales result the market had seen since 2014, It eclipsed the sales made in Cyber Week 2017 and was only narrowly behind sales from Cyber Week last year. And this is a fantastic example about how affiliates can take advantage of a fundamental change in trading conditions. And if you'd like to read more, check out our blog post entitled Revealed, Ofcom's Text-to-Switch Causes Large Boost in SIM-Only Sales. Our findings were also picked up by TechRadar, among other publications, so you may come across the insights from Trade Press as well. Okay, so now it's time for Publisher Picks. This is our regular segment where we showcase a couple of partners who are doing particularly well on the network. Joining me from the Publisher Services team this month is Tasmin Hansen. Hi, Tasmin.
Hi there.
So she's going to be talking about a couple of our affiliates today. So first up is one of our sort of a particular favourite, certainly with telco brands, and that's Ken's Tech Tips.
Yes. So Ken Tech Tips is one of my absolute favourite publishers because he works in an extremely competitive publisher space where we have, you know, the telco publisher giants that kind of dominate the space. And he is a one-man band. He launched his blog in 2005 and he just has a complete clear passion for mobile phones and their technologies and just wanting to help people know the best things about their phones and the best kind of deals out there. So quite a lot of his content is actually organic, and then he obviously is promoting the best deals that he can find. And yeah, he's really made his mark in the telco market. So he's now featuring in the top 20 mobile publishers on the A1 network, which I think is amazing, seeing as that he's a one-man band. And yeah, brands just love to work with him because they know he has a really huge user base that really value his opinion and has a really high conversion rate and generates loads of sales for these brands. So I think he's a great success story for smaller publishers, and them being able to know that they can make it in the space even when we do have, you know, giant publishers in the market.
Yeah, I think, as you say, one of the most impressive things about it is how it was clearly born from a labour of love. He clearly is very passionate about it. What's the what sort of deals or offers does kind of Ken require in order to promote brands?
So I think what he does is he just particularly keeps a good lookout on what advertisers are offering. He's not particularly huge in the exclusive space, so brands don't really give him exclusives, but he's just looking out for what advertisers actually offer and picks the best, what he thinks is best, and promotes them.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, more and more brands are obviously really hungry for good quality content affiliates, and he very much sort of ticks that box.
Yeah, that's exactly why he's great, because if you just go and look on his site, you'll just see his clear passion and all the advice he gives and tips. And yeah, it's a great site.
A lot of integrity as well.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so that's the first one we'll talk about this month. What about the next one? So next up we have, so Ken's kind of been fairly established for a number of years now, but next up we've got a brand new partner to the network, and one that is in a really interesting space, I think, because it's reflective of the growth of fintech in the emerging open banking era. So do you want to talk us through the second one?
Yeah. So I wanted to discuss this as it was actually a trend which Rob mentioned in his affiliate trends of 2018. And this was due to the launch of the EU legislation with in the Payment Service Directive, which paved the way for open banking. So for those of you who don't know what open banking is, this basically allows for consumers to take control of how their financial data is accessed and used by third parties. This is great as it's introducing a new element of competition in the banking sector. So this is seen as quite a huge opportunity within the affiliate industry, as we're able to offer the third party service. And we can do this by providing consumers with insights on buying behavior as well as comparison facilities of their current accounts. So we've recently had a technology partner called AppTap join the network, who are looking to take advantage of this opportunity. What AppTap do is they have the technology to have an inbuilt comparison engine within your current banking app. This allows them to compare your current bills with other deals on the market according to your personal professional usage. So for an example, if you're looking to change your energy supplier, their technology allows you to log into your current energy supplier's account to get your current usage to show you other deals in the market according to the usage of your current supplier.
I think you mentioned that it's not currently live yet. So yes. What's the kind of plan for the rollout?
So at the moment, it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation. So they're trying to get as many banks on board as they possibly can, which they're still kind of in that rollout situation. And they're also trying to get brands on board and working with them. I think what banks are wanting to see is the brands that are willing to work with them, and what brands are wanting to see is the banks that are willing to work with them. So they're kind of still in their initial start out phase, and I'm really hopeful that they do get either a really good brand bank on board, and it seems like brands are quite willing and open to this opportunity, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, definitely when having seen a demo of it online, I think what it clearly demonstrate is that there's a very obvious consumer benefit from using it, and it's very easy to use. Yes. As well, so they're kind of two of the things. Very often you see affiliates come into the space, and whilst the consumer proposition might be quite good, it's sort of not very well executed, or it feels a bit clunky or complicated. And actually what this really demonstrates is that there's a very clear consumer benefit. I can look at it and go, actually that's a very clear, very easy way of addressing things that kind of none of us really want to waste our time on, which is, you know, changing bank providers. Yes, exactly. Or utilities. Exactly. Or the kind of quite dull things.
And I think what's quite good about it is that it's all within your banking app. So you don't have to log out and go and do various things. You're able to log into, say, your current energy supplier's profile where they get your information and are able to do all comparisons within your banking app. So I think it's all very user-friendly and quick and easy.
And are they working to sort of standard CPAs?
So they have, it will be standard CPAs, but they haven't got their initial agreements in place. They're still kind of trying to get the brands on board, so these types of like commercial agreements haven't been agreed yet.
But we have a media deck and
a media deck and
credentials
everything.
if we need to push those out to our brands. Exactly. Okay, great. So hopefully that's given you a little bit of insight, one into an existing affiliate who we very much enjoy working with, and another one which we hope is really going to be transformational in the space and really bring some value to some of our brands and kind of really hopefully showcase the power of the affiliate channel. So thanks, Tasman. If any listeners wanted to get in touch with you to find out a bit more about that or anything else that's happening in the publisher team, what's the best way of doing so?
Please reach out to me on my email address, which is tasman.hansen@a1.com.
Great. Thanks, Tasman. Cool.
Thanks.
Next up, I'm welcoming Kate Irvin to the podcast. Kate has worked for AWIN for the past 5 years or so and has recently been sharing her thoughts on the affiliate industry at various events, including Affiliate Huddle and AWIN's own think tank. This prompted her to submit a couple of ideas for presentation slots at PI Live being held in London this October. PI Live, for those of you who haven't attended, is one of the largest performance marketing events in the calendar and has a specific focus on affiliate marketing, and AWIN is returning as a headline sponsor this year. Organiser Matt Wood wanted to do something different to select the speakers from more than 150 submitted presentation ideas, and by putting these sessions to the public vote, with details to be announced shortly on the PI Live website, Kate is here today to pitch her two shortlisted ideas. So hi, Kate.
Hi, everybody.
So you submitted two quite different topics, both of which have made it down to the final couple of dozen that will be the shortlist will be chosen from. So talk to me about the first of your two ideas.
Cool. So the first one is on account management practices. So it's called The Good, the Bad and the Ugly around account management practices. And essentially what this is talking about is affiliate marketing is such a great incubating hub for new technologies, new publisher types. And I think there's a few things in the industry that are actually stifling this growth. So what the talk would really be around is talking about this commission erosion, which I know AWIN have spoken about year after year, but really kind of re-highlighting that. So looking at what erosion is happening to commission and is that affecting these new technologies and new publishers who are driving all this amazing revenue for advertisers.
Okay. And are there kind of... additional insights? Have you got like data from various different clients on the network?
So what we'll be looking at, if this gets picked, is what we'll do is we'll use all of the advertisers that are currently on the AWIN network. We'll look at the data that we currently have at AWIN. So looking at deduping policies, looking at approval percentages in particular, and how that is impacting as an industry across verticals, the growth of these affiliate types. So hopefully in the talk, we'll see a lot of the data that AWIN's collected to be used to give a lot of insight into, as an industry, what we should be doing to policing and making sure that we're continuing to grow and continuing to grow these publisher types.
Okay, great. And so that's kind of the elevator pitch for the first one. So the second presentation idea that you submitted is what?
So the next one is on Generation Z, which I think...
Not Generation Z.
Oh, okay. Generation Z. I prefer Generation Z. It sounds a bit more millennial. Oh, that's me being a millennial.
That's a different one.
Yeah. So Generation Z is obviously, I think... a kind of hotbed of really bad stereotypes.
And so millennials, what is Generation Z?
Generation Z is anyone born after the year 1996. Don't quote me on that, but I believe it's 1996. So it's anyone who I believe is around 21 and younger. So the kind of new generation that's coming into the market, the new generations are going to be interacting with the affiliate channel. And so what we saw with millennials is we saw a real shift towards brand alliance and really... kind of moral decisions in purchasing. And what we're going to see with Gen Z is a lot more of an extension of that as well. So no one's ever really done a deep dive on Gen Z. You know, how is the affiliate channel going to interact with them? As a more or as a less brand loyal generation, how is the affiliate channel going to assist these brands? So it's a question that I don't think people have really explored and really looked into to the data that we're all collecting. So if it does get picked, I think it's going to be a really interesting opportunity to really deep dive into busting those myths. You know, Gen Z aren't always at the gym. You know, there are different facets within Gen Z, and we can't rely on these really heavy stereotypes. So if this does get picked, it will give me an opportunity to really break down who Gen Z is, these digital natives, and how we can interact with them in the future.
Have you looked at any of the data, or have you got any kind of nuggets from, because obviously you used to work on advertiser brand programs here?
Yeah, so I think what I have a lot of is a lot of stereotypes, a lot of documented stereotyping on Gen Z in particular. So I've even done it in terms of, you know, they're less brand loyal and they're more eco-conscious. That is a stereotype in itself. And I think actually there isn't a lot of information out there that really breaks down this generation and really breaks down what their values are, what their morals are, and how they interact with brands off the back of it. So to be confirmed on my stats, because I think this is something that actually as an industry we haven't really reviewed. And so if this does get picked, it will be quite a big kind of data collection project for myself in reviewing this and assessing what actually the truth is around this generation and how they will interact with the channel. It's just a bit different, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. As you say, I've never seen a presentation kind of segmenting like that, really. I think one of the interesting things that would be interesting, even if it doesn't get selected, obviously as a side project for you, is how that cuts across different affiliate sector types.
Yeah.
Because I can imagine that, you know, you've got cashback and voucher codes that have been very significant and they've been around for well over a decade now. But it'll be interesting to see how persistent those affiliate models are for future generations, or whether they're kind of new emerging models that come through, kind of, you know, we bang on about influencer marketing a lot and a lot of eye rolling at the same time about it. But it'd be interesting to see, again, whether there's myths around that, whether we kind of rely too heavily on assuming that people are really swayed by those types of publishers.
100%. I think that's such a good point. Like, we always assume that the younger generation are actually always on Instagram, but are they? Are they taking other influences from other kind of websites and things like that? And actually, is there things like your brand values that actually really overcome the discount that you're able to provide? So it'd be really interesting projects. I really hope it gets picked. So please vote for this one.
Okay, great. I think that's everything. I think you've kind of pitched those two suggestions well. So if you are interested in voting for one of Kate's, or indeed both of Kate's sessions, then the details have yet to be released as of the date of recording. But if you check out AWIN's website, we will be featuring details on how to vote for that. Or alternatively, you can go to Performance In's website, which is performanceinn.live, and they will have details there on how to vote for Kate's session. So thanks very much, Kate.
Thanks, everybody.
And now for this month's interview. For those of you who've had dealings with the Affiliate Marketing Council in the UK over the past few years, Claire O'Brien will be a familiar name. While at the IAB, Claire headed industry initiatives for the online performance and content and native councils, working with members to produce standards, events, research and training. She's also credited with helping further professionalise the affiliate channel. Since her switch to advertiser trade body ISBAR as head of performance and effectiveness, Claire has been tasked with shaping how ISBAR represents its brand members across all media channels, and particularly around the ever increasingly important performance marketing sector. Also joining us today is Emma Sutton, who is head of business development at ISBAR. Emma comes from a really strong ad tech background, and she also worked with Claire at the IAB. So welcome, both of you.
Thank you for having
Hello,
us.
Hello, Kevin.
Okay, so there's lots that I want to ask you specifically about ISBAR and some of the initiatives that you're working on. But for those of our listeners who are unfamiliar, can you give us a little bit of background as to what ISBAR does?
Yes. So ISBAR is the only body in the UK that represents the brand voice in advertising. We represent around about 3,000 brands. That's cross-sector, everything from retail, FMCG, to travel, banking, your very established hero brands, through to brands that are just new to market, embarking on their advertising and marketing career. What we do for them is we give them an opportunity to speak with one voice, whilst we try and support and create an environment for accountable, transparent, trustworthy advertising. They benefit from events, from upskilling, from meeting each other, from knowledge sharing, as well as contributing to the core pillars of ISBAR's work.
Claire, have you got anything to add to that?
I think elaborate on the one voice piece. I think we're at an interesting time as far as marketing is concerned. The whole profession, the whole sector, is pretty much virtually digitally driven now. And I'm not just talking here about the different media channels. It's the way that marketing works. CRM systems, digital transformations are underway with most organisations now. And it has fundamentally changed how marketers work, how they connect in the outside world. And it's also a time where digital channels, Facebook, Google, Amazon, to name but a few, have begun to dominate certain aspects of the marketing industry. And this has also had a fundamental impact on how our members think about, plan and implement their advertising. Largely speaking, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lack of external regulation or even internal regulation with these new platforms as well. And as this business, this exciting digital business has grown, advertisers have kind of sat in the wake, really, of the giant developments. And I think we're at a time, although they funded it, you know, it's their it's their money that's fueled all these amazing new platforms and machines and ways of reaching customers. And the time is advertisers have learned a great deal and have understood and now want to be part of that continued development. And by acting as one voice, as Emma's just described for us, whether that's through regulatory or through the establishment of standards, that's a core part of what we do, is bring all those voices, disparate voices from all the different sectors together, so that we can have a material impact on the future of the marketing and media landscape.
So you mentioned specifically, obviously we know that the digital ecosystem is pretty complex. You only kind of have to look at those organizational charts, which shows, you know, thousands of companies operating in different ways in different niches. And obviously, from a brand perspective, that's pretty, can be pretty bamboozling, I would imagine. What are the, but we are at sort of a certain stage of maturity now, where obviously some of these conversations around standardization and measurement are starting to happen. What are the specific topics? What are the specific concerns? What are the kind of strands that are particularly coming through when you speak to them, speak to your members?
There are the kind of common areas we're looking at is supply chain transparency, brand safety, ad fraud, agency, well, so all of those areas would be common across the piece. We actually work within three different priorities across the organisation. So if you like, we have a three-pillar system. And the kind of issues that I was just talking about there probably fall into our accountability and responsibility pillar, where we, on behalf of our members, work with media, for example, media channels, media owners, and hold them to account. So we spend a lot of time talking with Facebook, a lot of time talking with Google. There's a huge amount of our members' money is going into those platforms, yeah, whether that's through DoubleClick or whether it's directly into Facebook for ad campaigns.
And more in the UK than pretty much anywhere else.
But quite possibly. I'm not quite sure what the numbers are.
I think it's more than the US even.
Is it so, really? Yeah. But I think, yes, that's right, isn't it? Because I think there's a, in terms of overall advertising, I mean, we spend, what's the number, Emma? $23.5 billion is spent in the UK on advertising every year. And I think that works out on a per capita basis as makes us the number one ad, yeah, spending market in the world, like you say, Kevin, yeah. So there's a lot of money that's spent. There's a lot of innovation in the UK in terms of advertising. So it's a really good test bed to kind of do exciting things, but it's also a very valuable place to hold platforms like Facebook, like Google, like Amazon, to account, rather than as they often do. There's this hidden, you know, this walled garden approach, or as you pointed out, like the Lumascape with these 5,000 ad tech companies somehow sitting in between the advertiser and the publisher or the media owner. What actually happens to the money? How does this work? You know, what are the mechanics of it like? Because,
and the very famous example of The Guardian, where they bought their own inventory.
Yeah.
And they ended up with every pound that they spent, they ended up with, what, 30 pence, was it?
30 pence, I think, is what they measured. And in fact, you know, we're also working on a project right now, which is being funded by advertisers to investigate specifically what happens between the SSP and the DSP. So, you know, how much of that advertiser money reaches the publisher is working media. And it's something we're collaborating with the AOP over, so that we can have the world's first end-to-end look at what goes on. PwC are leading that piece of work for us. And it's still, we haven't started it yet, but we've certainly got our advertiser members signed up. We've got publishers signed up. And that's going to be a really impactful report that I hope is going to be published before Christmas.
Great. And what other, so you mentioned that as a kind of a specific initiative. Hopefully we'll be seeing it soon. What other initiatives are you working on with members, or have you kind of been putting the feelers out that you feel would really add value to that kind of single voice?
I think where we're working, like every company, regardless of whether you're in advertising or not, is having to grapple with the impact of the GDPR. And we are working very closely with our members to help and support them and the regulator. You know, so we had a meeting with the ICO and several of our members a few weeks ago to help the regulator, the ICO, understand how advertisers use data, how advertisers deploy governance across how that data is managed in terms of directly with customers and as well in terms of how that's managed through the supply chain, through the media owners and other intermediary partners on the way. So we want to be part of that, our members want to be part of that movement, which actually establishes what good practice is.
Yeah.
Because we haven't got full guidance from the ICO yet, understandably, who of course are working with the ad tech industry yeah. right now.
I get the impression with the ICO that actually they're kind of trying to do the right thing by everybody. And that, because you always have that concern with regulation that if you don't self-regulate, someone will regulate who doesn't really understand the nuance or the detail of your business, and it kind of is heavy-handed or misguided. And I do get a sense that people have kind of put their cards on the table and everybody's trying to come up with something that is cohesive and works for everybody.
I think you're absolutely right. And it was the impression when, I'm assuming lots of people listening to this will have read Simon McDougall's update report on RTB. So just taking a very tiny part of the digital ad supply chain, programmatic RTB. And it's very clearly written, very clearly expressed what the regulator thinks does and doesn't work. And very clearly expressing, look, we understand the importance to publishers of this revenue, and we understand the importance of the audience reach to advertisers. So I tell you what, advertising industry, you've got 6 months, and really this is directed at the ad tech part of the industry, to to reflect on what this report says and come up with creative and innovative ways that the industry can be enhanced within the structure of the GDPR. So we're into that process at the moment. We are, like everyone else, working closely with the ICO. It is in everyone's interests that the law is observed, that all companies, all players in the chain are compliant with the guidance, and we can see that the guidance is beginning to be structured. But yes, I would say that 6 months really demonstrates the willingness of the ICO to get it right for business as well.
So if I can turn your attention now to affiliate, because obviously this is predominantly an affiliate marketing podcast, from an affiliate marketing perspective, obviously that's one, for us, very tangible arm of performance marketing. But how much does that register with your members? You can be honest.
I mean, it registers incredibly high with some of our members, doesn't it, Emma? You know, if you're talking about a beat, I don't want to name companies, but if you're talking about sectors like telecoms and entertainment.
Yeah, performance-driven marketers, yeah.
Retail, financial.
Yes. Across all of them.
Yeah, you can see a round table. So in our performance and programmatic group, so that's the steering group, the media steering group, where we bring specialists from our member companies around the table to address whatever issue or opportunity it is that we're there to work with them on. There are some really seriously qualified people sitting around the table who, you know, have been leading the performance programs for most of the UK's biggest performance-dependent brands. And I think you can say something like performance-dependent brands, because that's how the complexity of their you know, high volume customer churn programs are managed. And affiliate plays a very big role in that. But underlying affiliate, of course, is CERT. And yeah. that's something that we are looking at, ISBAR is looking at, I say looking at, working with, for the first time collectively. So the major search platforms in the UK have not ever talked with ISBAR before around how that's managed, how new algorithms make their way into the market, how advertisers are dependent on these algorithms, etc. And of course, search is now the single biggest advertising channel, way bigger than TV in the UK. I think it's 28% of that. Mm. 23.5 billion. What is it? 7 billion? 7 billion nearly? 6.8 billion or something? And I'm sure we can check that out. That is a huge amount of money. And while, yes, the long tail is an important constituent in that spend, every single one of the major brands is investing in paid search. And I think there's a big correlation with how search works and how the affiliate industry
Yeah, well,
works.
Search has always been a subset of the course. Kind of general affiliate landscape anyway. I mean, as you know, I know it was a frustration of yours when you were at the IAB. You don't always feel that we kind of do ourselves justice in terms of the way that we talk about ourselves or the way that we describe the benefits or invest in certain elements of the channel. What from now looking at it from your, with your ISBA hat on, what kind of things do we need to be doing better or saying differently?
I think the industry, the affiliate industry and you know, the related services with the affiliate industry, other intermediaries in this performance space would serve themselves very well by taking a broader look. And I think this, if anyone who knows me is listening to this, they will know that this is not a new thing I'm saying. You know, I haven't really changed the mantra from my IAB days to now. You know, when you understand the range of considerations, a lot of the people that the affiliate industry will be talking to will also be handling the major programmatic advertising budgets. They will also be having regular sort of branding updates. You know, affiliate is just a part. Yeah. Paid search is just a part. Programmatic advertising is just a part of much bigger budgets. I mean, at ISBAR, we look across all channels. It's not just looking at online channels. It's, you know, we look at television, we look at outdoor. So we have a view, we have an overview. And I think that the affiliate industry could do itself a lot of good service by really understanding how complex a world our members, your clients, are operating in at the moment. Yeah, the world used to be simple. You know, there were media owners, there were advertising agencies, and there were customers. The clients. Mm. And it was a very simple triangle. And it supported itself very well. And we're now in a much more fragmented world. And the fact that affiliate is a brand new channel, search is a brand new channel. I mean, we could have separate discussions as to whether or not search is a true media channel in the way that television is or outdoor. But that's for another time. This industry needs to be an integral part of the conversations that perplex our customers, our members, wouldn't you say, Emma? You know, they're thinking constantly about how do we solve the problem of where and how, not just to spend the money, but to verify that spending, to evaluate that spending, to answer the bigger needs and pressures that are coming down from the senior management team within their organisation. And I think that the affiliate industry for too long has considered itself somehow separate from all other media and commercial decision making. And
I mean, one thing that springs to mind is I'm currently in the process of doing some interviews with some of our key brands, because obviously it's always really useful to get that kind of external perspective. And one thing that we always think about is the fact that we think, well, you know, affiliate, yes, there's lots of different moving parts to it, but at its core, it's pretty easy to understand. And it's a CPA measurement. It's really simple measurement. You know, effectiveness and measurement are kind of key parts of what ISBAR is kind of currently working on, so key initiatives. What, how can we sort of communicate that better? How can we, what are the sort of, you mentioned that it's a very complex situation at the moment. How do we sort of cut through with the fact that affiliate is eminently measurable? How complicated is that for people to be able to assimilate with all the other things that they're trying to measure at the same time?
I think there's a couple of ways that that's not so straightforward, because it for one, it may be counted as a sales channel,
yeah,
and not a marketing channel,
yeah.
You know, so
classic.
so.
So there's a dichotomy. So that's what brands are effectively struggling with, like have the kind of short versus longer term measurement piece.
Yeah, and then it's different for different sectors. So telecoms or finance or even auto, you know, have very different ways of marketing to the massive consumer packaged good brand owners who typically have much less experience in the direct-to-consumer space, which I suppose affiliate marketing fits into in some respects, because they're low-cost, low-value products, high-volume, low-cost, high-value, low-value, have typically been distributed through the supermarket networks, you know, and other retail networks. And so they haven't had that direct connection with consumers, but that's changing, and there's a big eagerness to change and understand what that means for them. Another complexity for
so what is the marketers. What is the kind of nirvana then, is if such a thing, obviously it's an evolving piece anyway, so we'll probably never get to any kind of nirvana, but what is the sort of longer term goal around being able to kind of provide something that is easy to understand, consistent, cohesive across multiple channels, trying to do different things? Is there kind of like a single measurement view that is possible?
Oh, the old God metric. I mean, that's one that's been tackled for ages. I think, you know, rather more prosaically, the real thing that is taxing our marketers at the moment is the big difference between short-term measurement for short-term kind of marketing, and you might say that affiliate marketing fits into that short-term bracket, and search, paid search, you know, whoosh, instant results, you know, great fancy attribution systems with dashboards so that people can say, you know, the ad's just gone online. Let's see how it's doing. It's got this many likes. And there's a big confusion as well sometimes, you know, about measuring reach, you know, the number of people that have actually seen it, i.e. what you've paid for, and how effective that is. I had a great story from one of our members who did a wonderful presentation to the group, and she works for a financial services organisation selling mortgages, which is not the kind of thing you change on a daily basis, and life insurance and car insurance. You know, so these are big, long-term consideration products. Lots of people listening to this will be familiar with that. And they had a new branding TV campaign launch. And because her bosses, if you like, or her commercial managers were so used to seeing attribution systems and, you know, what's happening in the online world, 10 minutes after the first ad aired in this long brand building campaign, she was getting notes, how's it doing? How's the campaign doing? And she's like, we have no idea. It might drive some immediate call center traffic from the first ad, but there is this expectation that has been very quickly established that, well, everything's instant now, so we can measure things instantly. But when you look at brand equity and you look at that as a you know, a piece of valuable asset to any business, it can take years, it can take decades to build that up. And by not focusing on the integrity of that brand and just focusing on short-term business and using, I don't know, you know, price elasticity and discounting and so forth in order to acquire, so you just focused on customer acquisition in the short term, the business could be losing out. There's lots of articles about this. Burnett and Field, I would, you know, if anyone wants to learn more about it. So what we want to do is, accepting that there is a short-term expectation, is with our with our partners out in the marketplace, we want to be able to understand how it may be possible to consider being able to measure the long-term value of a branding campaign in the short term. So we're talking about this right now. We don't want to solve the problem. It's not up to advertisers to do that. There's a huge industry of experts out there. But we want to be able to understand what the ask is to go out there. And I would expect that we'll be publishing something on that in Q4 this year. Great. And that's another kind of initiative.
Okay, so that's something that's on the horizon. What else is can we expect? Any kind of interesting sessions? Or I noticed there was one on KPIs and measurement coming up soon for ISBAR members.
I think that's one of our training sessions. Yeah, and that would come out. Yeah, that we do a lot of training sessions, don't we, Emma? You probably know a bit more.
Yes, we do a lot of training sessions for our members throughout the year. They can be anything from, we were speaking today with somebody about writing an effective brief, down to insights, completely across the board to introduction to digital, for example. Yeah. So a wide breadth of things. What we try and do for our members is give them access to every area that they may want to upskill themselves or their teams in. And also an opportunity through some of the forums that Claire's been speaking about. So our steering groups that look to tackle challenges and opportunities that we may have in the industry, learn from each other, knowledge share, and in our larger events, things like our annual conference once a year, brings together all of our senior member marketeers and also invites the wider industry to come along and listen to what we're doing, hear from some of our members. So this year we had Keith Weed, the year before we had Mark Pritchard keynoting for us. And similarly, during the summer, we have an annual lunch where our members come together to discuss in a really nice, informal environment how things are going, hear from a key speaker again. We've had the likes of Sky talk for us before. Try and encourage positivity and progress within the industry.
Right. So if anybody, any brands listening, want to get in touch, what's the best way of getting in touch with you guys?
Sending Emma an email, I would say.
You can send myself an email. You can send Claire an email. If you go onto our website, www.isbar.org.uk, you'll find all of our specialists, as well as myself, our head of membership, and the whole team there.
Great.
With our contact details.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much for coming in today. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. It was good. Thanks.
And that's about it for this month. If you're attending to Mexico in Cologne in September, Awin will once again have a presence there. So don't forget to drop by the stand and say hello or attend our day 2 presentation on customer loyalty and affiliate marketing. Rob will also be back next month, where he'll be sharing other highlights from Affiliate Summit, and we'll have our usual mix of news and interviews. Join us then if you can. Oh, and if you enjoy Awin Talks, we'd love a review, especially if it's a positive one. Bye for now.